The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine. It is Tuesday, the 22nd of October. How are you all doing out there in Radio Land? It's great to have you on board for the next 3 hours on what's going to be a busy show. We are going to talk about the possibility, in fact, the probability, the likelihood of a general election on November 29th. John McAteer is going to be joining me to discuss that. If you've got a comment in relation to that, or indeed a question for John, feel free to get in touch with us. I'll give you the numbers right now. 086 60 25,000. That's your WhatsApp and text. So give us a call on 07491 25,000. If you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. After 10, Community Garda information, where we'll bring you the latest appeals and information from Ongarda Síochána here in Donegal first and live. That and so much more besides. If you want to watch today's proceedings, well, hop on your smart TV or Fire Stick. If you're at home, open up the YouTube app and search Highland Radio Ireland. Give us a like and a subscribe. We're across Facebook too, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries, and also Highland Hub. And on the X platform, streaming around the world. Okay, let's have a look at some of the newspapers this morning. The Irish Times this morning, the government has been advised to increase driving license and car testing fines, hike penalties for dangerous road users, and expand direct exchequer funding of road safety amid a series of dire financial warnings about the Road Safety Authority. A final copy of an external review into the agency, seen by the Irish Times, says there is a risk of insufficient resources and focus being allocated to road safety and education. It also recommends a wider overhaul of the RSA and the transfer of some function to the Department of Transport, which had been expected, and that was mooted on this programme last week. The report by consultancy firm Indicon also details growing financial pressure at the RSA, outlining that the annual deficit is expected to rise from around 20 million this year to nearly 45 million in 2033, with a deficit in several operational areas. You'd wonder where all the money is going, though, wouldn't you? They just recently hired a PR firm to sort of handle the public message as to why road deaths are increasing, according to reports. So is that a fantastic way to spend money? I don't know. But for the authorities, accumulative reserves, which shortly are likely to be depleted, no funding would be available for crucial road safety functions, the report warns. So there's something seriously amiss there. I think road safety should be brought under the control of whichever government is in power at the time, with others consulting into it. I think to have some agency that is struggling financially for whatever reason being responsible for trying to get that message out there is crazy, and we need to look seriously at that. The three leaders of the coalition parties agreed last night that the general election would be held this year, but there was no agreement on a date or on when the election would be called. Taoiseach Simon Harris indicated his preference for a Friday, but the leaders did not formally agree a day or date. Officials were tight-lipped about last night's meeting, which came after the Green leader Roderick O'Gorman's call for a November 29th election caused significant anger in both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. A three-line statement was issued by the leaders after their meeting last night, which said simply that the leaders had agreed the general election will take place in 2024, that they had agreed the passage of the finance bill is the priority for the government, and that the committee stage of the bill will commence on November 5th. I wonder, will that allow time for legislation to be passed to allow changes to the defective concrete scheme to be retrospective? I certainly will have my concerns that that will be a job for the next government, which is going to leave a Christmas of ill content for those affected by that, waiting for news on that. But anyway, it does look like November 29th. That's what we're preparing for here. We'll talk about that more, as I say, with the Tyrconnell Tribune's John McAteer a little later on. I mean, the 22nd seems too soon. That all will be dissolved on the 5th of November or very shortly thereafter. And you don't want to go into December, do you? Because then you're interfering with people's Christmas preparations. So all signs point to November the 29th, with counting of ballots then on the following day. You heard reference to this in the news, but for those just tuning in, I wonder what your views are on this. It's from the Irish Independent. Unemployed people who refuse to engage with social welfare employment services will see their job seekers' benefit cut by €90 under a plan quietly signed off by the government after the budget. In one of her last acts as Social Protection Minister, Heather Humphreys decided to double the fine imposed on unemployed people in receipt of job seekers' payments who do not engage with her department. So these are people who are receiving social welfare. They've been called to look at opportunities, training opportunities, placement opportunities with the department. They've refused to do so, and now their payments will be cut by €90 per week. The previous reduction imposed on people who do engage with social welfare services on two occasions was €44, but Ms Humphreys doubled the penalty to 90 in the social welfare bill, which passed through the Dáil unannounced. The legislation will be debated in the Shannon today. Ms Humphreys, who last weekend made the shock decision to pull out of the general election, clashed with Fianna Fáil and Green Party members during the budget negotiations over a proposal to increase the state pension by €15 a week while leaving the job seekers rate unchanged. So if you were in the Shannon today, if you're a senator and you're asked to speak on these proposals, would you be yay? Yes, indeed. The payment should be cut by €90, or would you be nay? That there are other things that need to be looked at and so on and so forth. Do you back her or not in that regard? As you would know, petrol and diesel seems very high at the moment. It has been higher, but it seems very high. But why? Because prices have dropped elsewhere, but not necessarily here. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. Petrol and diesel prices have dropped for the third successive month, but Irish drivers are still paying extortionate amounts of fuel tax, experts say. Petrol has increased by 2 cents to an average of 172 per litre, while diesel prices fell by 1 cent to an average of 166 per litre, marking the continuation of a decline in prices since August. But with excise duty and VAT, Ireland is still paying more for diesel than almost any other European country and more fuel tax than any other EU state. Kevin McPartland, CEO of industry body Fuels for Ireland, who we've spoken to on this programme on a number of occasions, he said, "I think it's bizarre weeks away from election that the government is getting away with this. Even with the current drop, the high commodity price means the government is making more on VAT than it normally would by putting 23% on top of everything else." He added, "The government is really making a killing on the back of Irish motorists because of those high taxes, and they're being slightly covered by the fact that the fuel price has dropped, concealing that they're taking more than ever before." On to the Irish Daily Star this morning, and Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman has asked Tusla to refer its handling of Kyran Dernan's case to a panel that investigates the deaths of children in state care. Minister O'Gorman confirmed that he had asked Tusla to refer the case to the National Review Panel, which would normally examine cases after a Garda investigation is complete. Last week, Gardaí launched a murder investigation following the reported disappearance of Kyran 8 in Drogheda, County Louth. Kyran and his mother were reported missing in August. However, Gardaí believe the young boy may have died up to 2 years ago. Kyran's mother, Dáile Dernan, was found safe and well in the UK. Kyran had contact with at least one Tusla worker before he disappeared. So it's not that Tusla weren't aware of Kyran. They'd had at least one meeting with a social worker before his disappearance. It's understood Kyran left school before the summer holidays in 2022, which was the last confirmed sighting that Gardaí have of him. Now, you will know, and many of you will know, you would have got letters during COVID. Many of you would, not all of you, of course, during COVID or post-COVID, where your child would have been absent for over, you know, what is it, 20, 21, 22 days. And a lot of people were like, well, why am I getting these letters? Well, they were effectively to, I presume, ensure that there were no child safety issues. But obviously, did this happen in Kyran's case? Was there any follow-up? Was no one surprised or questioning how this person, this young lad, seemingly disappeared off the face of the earth, that always gone to Northern Ireland and that was just accepted with no proof? Where is he? Can we do a can we pass it on to an agency in the north and do a welfare check? That was it, nothing. The Garda investigation team upgraded Kyran's case to a murder probe last Wednesday, and investigations are continuing. So the reason why I think it's important that those investigations do continue and every element of that is looked at is because this is the case that we know of. This is the case of Kyran. How many are there other children who the state presumes have moved elsewhere but haven't, and could be either dead or being abused or whatever it might be. It's not reported in the papers today, but Gardaí have taken over a house, and they're going to conduct searches of the house, gardens and adjacent lands in their search for that wee angel, young Kyron there. Back to politics. The Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Mary Lou McDonald has vowed to issue an unequivocal apology to a teenager over Sinn Féin's handling of the Niall O'Donnell scandal. She will also correct the record on the young man's age after it was incorrectly stated he was 17 when he received the text. He was 16. And as I said in the show yesterday, that's a no-brainer. She thought he was 17, has learnt he's 16. And as I said yesterday, I have no doubt she will correct the record as soon as she has an opportunity. Mr. O'Donnell resigned from the Shannon in December, 2 months after he stood down from the party. Sinn Féin had initially claimed he'd stepped down for mental health reasons, but admitted he'd sent inappropriate texts to a teen. The party continuously insisted last week the boy who had received the texts from 17. The party continuously insisted last week the boy who had received the texts was 17. Sorry, there's a typo there. However, in a statement issued to the Sunday Independent, the teenager confirmed he was just 16 as he called on Miss McDonald to apologise for her disastrous handling of the case. That come from the younger teen there. And a teacher supply crisis means unqualified people are filling hundreds of roles, it's been claimed. This is in the Sun. Some 951 posts are vacant in primary and special schools, the survey found. And schools expect a further 1,816 vacancies from next January. It means they have been forced to rely on personnel not registered with the Teachers Council to cover short-term teaching absences. Now, obviously, and the conversation has been had, there are hundreds and hundreds of teachers leaving this country as soon as they're qualified every single year. They contribute to their education. The state does too. Is it time, because if this is a crisis, you know, you have to do crazy things in crisis times. Is it time, and we've mentioned this on the show before and it's proved controversial and it's not necessarily my view, but is it time that we insist that if you are educated and qualified in this country, that you must serve at least a period of time before moving abroad or whatever it might be? I don't know how controversial is that, if at all. Or do you think it's a person's own life, their own education and their own contribution, and they can do with it what they wish, i.e. head to Dubai, Australia, America, Britain, wherever it might be? Let us know your views on that and anything else that you want to talk about on 08660 25000, or give us a call, in fact, on 07491 25000. Just a nice one to kick us off here. Of course, we had the big cash draw during the summer, and we got an email from someone that won, and it reads as follows. Hello there. Just want to say a big thank you on the €10,000 prize money from your summer draw last year. Myself and my wife had just bought a house in Artane in Dublin at that time, and we were in the middle of moving, so the funds were most welcome and put to great use. I always have Highland on my Alexia, but unfortunately haven't been as lucky in any competitions since. Thanks again, and keep up the good work on the show. Thanks from Dara McCafferty. Well, Dara, you've €10,000 in your pocket. You'll be all right. Sure, you might win again in the future. John McAteer's with me. Hi, John.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I can't see you. Do you have your privacy thing on your webcam?
Let me see. Where is that now?
I want to be able to see you, John.
Rather odd, that. You can't see me.
No.
Camera's on. The camera's on.
There can be a little black thing on the camera for privacy that goes across the camera. But sure, anyway, it'll be grand.
I'm checking that, so like I can see you clearly.
I know. How do I look?
You're wonderful, as always.
John,
why shouldn't you be?
Don't worry about that. Come here, before we get into the serious stuff, happy birthday. Thank you.
Thanks a million.
How did you feel about sort of, you know, all the nice things that were said to you and said about you and celebrating such a milestone? Are you comfortable with that kind of stuff?
I don't have any issue with it, but it never happened before, you see.
Okay.
No anticipation that was going to happen, not a clue.
Brilliant. Fantastic.
I just
stuff.
Walked in, make a cup of tea for Eamon McFadden and myself, and Glashy went piping up the stairs to meet everybody.
Yeah. What a beautiful wee dog Glashy is, too.
The first inkling that I had that there was something going on here was that when I opened the kitchen door to go out into the hallway, there you were with wee Hudson, and there was Caroline Orr, and who else? The place was full of people.
Oh, there's There's loads of people there. Father John, Joe, Brendan, Stephen McGuire, all the people that hold you in such high regard, and many that do that weren't there. Anyway, listen, what it does mean is we're facing into another general election, John, and it looks like it's going to be November 29th. Have you, do you see anything that suggests otherwise?
No, because they've put out, well, the three party leaders yesterday put out numbers of options, the 21st, the 29th, and the 6th of December. Now, I can't imagine the 6th of December being a runner, because that's the night of the Late Late Toy Show. It's their biggest money spinner of the year. And I can't imagine David McCullough and the political editors of the national newspapers landing onto the set dressed up as Santa Claus and singing jingle bells. That's not on at all.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The 29th, the finance bill is to be published for the week after next, is it? Next week to have the break.
November 5th, yeah.
They're back on the 5th, 6th and 7th. And that has to go to committee. How long it's going to be there, we're not too sure. It's going to be a very top-heavy document this year, because there's a lot of money thrown into the mix in that last week. There's a couple of million thrown in there. And there's a whole lot of things to tease out there. I was just reading a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was in the Farmers' Journal, there's a 400 grant per calf, which is rather odd. The doesn't specify whether it's for the farmer or for the breeder. Now, the breeder nowadays, new genetics, ways and means of trying to analyse, can we reduce the methane coming from the cows? So it's not specified which of them that's for. That's got to be ironed out, and probably 1,001 other things. So there'll be at least 2 fairly big days, I'd imagine, in the Finance Committee.
Yeah,
then it comes back to the floor of the Dáil then, and probably will get guillotined.
Yeah.
Or do they want that to happen? Because, you see, they may be left with no option for that.
Mm. Well, if they get that over the line, the Taoiseach then heads to Áras an Uachtaráin. He asks the President to dissolve the current Dáil. A new Dáil then cannot be elected until the previous Dáil has been dissolved, so that has to happen. And then there's a relatively short run in there, a 3 weeks general election campaign. So I suppose we'll talk locally in a moment, but let's talk nationally. Obviously, Simon Harris, his personal approval rating is very, very high since he took over from Leo Varadkar. His party's approval rating is very high as well. Fianna Fáil have shown some gains recently, but they're still nationally under 20%. And the latest poll showed Sinn Féin falling to 16%. So this close to the election, John, how does it play? How does it play out then? How do those numbers actually play out on the only poll that matters, and that's on November 29th, we suspect?
Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to be fine. They're going to be the two main parties in government by the looks of it. Sinn Féin has a lot of ground to make up there. You can't exactly rule that out, because, you know, it's in that final week of the election campaign that all statistics shows that people make up their minds. Vast majority of them, anyway, that some people are going to vote the same regardless. But there's a magic figure of 88 to get to have a wafer thin majority of one single vote. I'm not too sure that they can achieve that. I'm not too sure that there are going to be strong enough other parties there. Is the Green Party going to face wipeout? They got 12 seats the last time. They're not going to get those this time. Fine Gael has also the other problem that there's 18 people walking away, including Heather Humphreys. So there's a lot of ground to be made up there. Remember, they're on 24%. 24% is a vague enough idea. It's not even 20. It's not even a quarter of the vote. Fianna Fáil is something behind that, on 18 or 19%, and Sinn Féin is sitting there on 16%. Now, on that result for Sinn Féin, they would substantially see a reduction there, and They're in all kinds of difficulties. Sinn Féin has been under total siege for 2 full weeks. There's a lot of clarity missing out of there. I don't know why Brian Stanley's issue should be on the floor of the Dáil or anything like that there, you know. They made something of a mess out of the James McMonagall thing and the two press officers. That was a very live issue entirely. Again, it should have been dealt with, and it wasn't. You know, that lingered on for a very long time. And somebody inside Sinn Féin did not seem to have their eyes on the ball there. because those two senior press officers would have had to know what they were doing. Anyway, that is my presumption, Art. So I expected the Sunday Times poll to see Sinn Féin much lower than the 16.
And of course, we've got the Senator O'Donnell story, which is ongoing. You know, I know, and particularly maybe Sinn Féin supporters might feel that the knives are out for Sinn Féin. And there's no doubt there's plenty of journalists that have been waiting on the wing, sharpening those knives for these types of controversies. But I think, would you think, sorry, that Sinn Féin have to take quite a bit of personal responsibility in relation to this? The handling of these various controversies has not been fantastic. I mean, Mary Lou McDonald's going to have to go into the Dáil now and correct the record. Now, she'll argue she had the information that she had. But when you're explaining you're losing, John, and whatever about maybe there being some sort of a, you know, knives out for Sinn Féin, I think, or do you think, they have to take a certain element of responsibility for this themselves?
Yeah. They have to. She made that very clear last night when it was revealed that the young fellow that Senator Donnelly had the text with was 16 and not 17. So, like, there is a substantial difference. She has immediately taken the initiative there to ensure that she puts that on the record of the Dáil, probably when the Dáil sits today. Now, whether there's other clarifications needed there, you get this gut feeling that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and elements of the national media are going to do anything and everything to throw all the dirt that they can at Sinn Féin to keep them away from the cabinet room. Because if they can't get in there this time, they're in real bother. Mm-hmm. They would have to go through a total sea change over the next 5 years. Mary Lou McDonald will not be there by then. Of course, there's going to be major questions over her leadership. They may not want to hear that and they may not like that. But that's what I'm getting on the ground, that Mary Lou is probably at a point where she should be considering stepping aside. I suppose the big problem there, Greg, is that they don't really have anybody to put in her place. There's no obvious figure there. You know, like when she was the anointed one, when Gerry Adams, you know, long before he went, Mary Lou, female, very strong voice, and sitting there in Dublin Central, won a huge vote. I mean, she's going to get... There would have been thoughts that she would take a second candidate in there this time round. I know the constituencies are all fairly well changed around, but Mary Lou McDonald in Dublin Central, her seat is safe. There's no two ways about that there. But at the end of all that, you know, has she been there longer, too long?
Well, you know, if we talk to sort of the attitude prior to these most recent controversies that haven't left the headlines, Sinn Féin was struggling and they themselves had a meeting because they knew things were going wrong. They were looking at the polls. Some of it was to do with the referenda. Some of it was to do with comments which they say were misquoted, in that Mary Lou McDonald said if the vote didn't go a certain way, they'd run the referendum again. Then there was the what some would see as a bit of a flip-flopping on the migration issue. And then they've changed some of their attitudes and policies in relation to that. And I did put it to Piers Doherty last week, and I don't think he disagreed with me, when I said that for a long time people wanted change and they saw Sinn Féin as that change. But the same people I would speak to now sort of see Sinn Féin as the same as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And as I say, I think maybe Sinn Féin recognise that themselves to some extent, even though they would say they're miles apart in terms of policy and what have you. So the problems for Sinn Féin probably predate the recent controversies, which means there's a very steep hill to climb.
The problems for Sinn Féin, for me, began on the night of the Dublin riots and the subsequent handling of it, calling for the head of the Justice Minister. This was always going to be a bit of grandstanding, in that even though there's a Dáil vote that's going to win, that it makes no difference. They can't remove a sitting minister. Issues around that, calling for Drew Harris to resign, those were a very fickle 24 hours. The damage done in the centre of Dublin that night ran into millions and millions, perhaps billions of euro. And people would be looking in at that there in the next day, seeing a picture of a vulnerable man being paraded around the Dáil by Louise O'Reilly. that would have raised a lot of concerns. I mean, thinking, you know, a couple of months down the road, 6-7 months down the road, is this the party that's going to be leading us? Are these people going to be senior ministers? Is this what we want here? Sinn Féin had cultivated and had a very big success for a number of years in trying to win over a big share of that middle ground in Ireland. That was very successful. That's why they were up on 37% of the vote 2 years ago, and now they're down at 16.
So
there's been a series of fault lines developing there, as if the real leadership were too concentrated on all these detailed policies and took their eyes off the ball. Now, just Paddy McLaughlin put it to me very succinctly when I interviewed him this night last week. He says there isn't a single member in our party that doesn't go into every week with their heart and soul 100% working for people. And the fact that they've been so demonised and crucified, literally, has come as quite a huge shock to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, where do you go from there? Because they do have good policies.
The obvious thing that you do, and Fine Gael did this quite successfully, is whether people like it or not, you change the leadership of the party, because then it becomes like a clean brush.
Absolutely, because, you know, What exactly has been different with the new leader,
so,
compared to Leo, a very polished performer. I'm going to take a break
and come back and we'll go through things locally. Just one question before we do, and maybe you can try and see if you can get that camera working in the meantime. What can, if anything, Sinn Féin do to close the gap and hope to be in power in this country after the general election?
Can probably do an awful lot. They must redouble their efforts to connect with the people, to connect with the electorate. I mean, Sinn Féin, for some reason, they're different to other parties. They had a convention out in the out in Letterkenny, out in the Clanree there a number of weeks back. None of us knew about it. They're serving themselves no useful purpose, because what comes in from an evening of that kind is not good enough. Compared to that, if you have a journalist there and a photographer that's going to put that out professionally, they made a bit of a hems out of that, you know. And it's not the first time that they've done that. So there seems to be hiding away from the media, from the public. There's a certain amount of uncertainty within the leadership of the party. I don't know if that's relevant in Donegal, but it is relevant nationally. But, I mean, any party and every party that wants to get some traction, they're going to try and get as many of the media as possible and have as many photographers. I mean, there's no bother going to Fianna Fáil conventions or Fine Gael conventions or Aintu conventions or that kind of thing.
Right, you okay. Know? John, stay right where you are if you don't mind. Going to take a very short break, and we're going to be back with John McAteer and have a look at maybe the state of play here in Donegal ahead of what's expected to be now a general election on November 29th. So far declared have expressed their intention to run in the general election for Fine Gael, Nicky Bradley, John McNulty. For Fianna Fáil, Charlie McConnell, Og Pat the Coat Gallagher. For Aintu, Mary T. Sweeney. Pearse Doherty and Paul McLaughlin for Sinn Féin. Thomas Pringle, Independent. The Irish People Party, Eamon McGee, Kim McMenamin, Jerry McKeever, and the 100% Redress Party, Charles Ward. So it's one big constituency, less a little bit of South Donegal, 5 seats, a lot to play for, John.
An awful lot to play for here, because Joe McHugh is standing down. You have a new team, a new party, 100% Redress. Mickey has been the dominant issue for the past 4.5 years. And you're going to have seats at play here. Fianna Fáil is going to be bidden to take 2 seats. I wouldn't rule that out. Sinn Féin, first of all, on 45% of the vote the last time round. They will take those 2 seats fairly comfortably. And I would always query whether it was why they couldn't get a third candidate in there, because I think that Donegal does things quite differently. Sinn Féin had a very strong local elections here, you know. Their 10 seats were quite safe. Fine Gael is going to be interesting. John McNulty has a very strong campaign running in South Donegal and up into the Finn Valley, where he has a business based in Stranorlar. He's spending a lot of his time here in this Mufford electoral area, and indeed I'm meeting him on Thursday. interesting, you know, there's a whole new resurgence there in the Fine Gael organisation. I feel it locally here in Milford and in Letterkenny, and that they're uniting behind McNulty and that he's pulling them together the way Joe McHugh did in 2002. You get that sense, you know, you get that sense that they're actually out working on the ground. It's altogether different to the local elections, which was quite a balls altogether, you know, that they lost 5,000 votes. But McNulty will be in there. Thomas Pringle is always going to be in there. Remember that numbers of those, Charlie McConnell Logue, Pat the Cope, Piers Doherty, Patrick McLaughlin, they're all fighting their fourth general election.
So
they're
really
very,
what
very
you're
experienced.
Saying then is, well, who misses out then? Because, you know, you've said rule out Fianna Fáil, electing two, Sinn Féin are likely to get two, Thomas Pringle is always there or thereabouts, and you fancy John McNulty, so...
Yeah, well, like you're going to have the 100% redress party in there. Charles Ward is pretty well placed right in the heart of Donegal there, in the centre of it, in the Finn Valley. But he would have to get a substantial vote. He would have to get the entire redress vote from Inishowen and from Letterkenny as well, you know. And that's a big ask. That's a very big ask because, you know, at the end of the day, people intend to stay quite local. I mean, do you think Inishowen wants to lose a senior minister and the Sinn Féin chief whip, who's a very experienced, hard-working TD? Those are issues that the Mica Redress group, it's not impossible, but it's not going to be an easy task. It's going to be completely different to the local elections.
Were you surprised at, obviously defective concrete is a problem that affects much of the county, but the epicentre is in Inishowen. The 100% Redress Party had candidates there that pulled in massive votes. So they're opting to run a candidate who ran the local elections outside of that epicentre, but also that didn't gather enough first preference, though doing himself proud, didn't gather enough first preferences to get elected. So can you understand the strategy there? Because what it could end up looking like is that it's not that big an issue altogether if they can't get someone over the line.
You see, as a new party, there's a lot of learning to be done here. There was talk at the AGM, and we had that covered, even though they didn't know that. The reality here was that they were talking about running two candidates, one in Inishowen and one in Letterkenny. That was never going to work because a candidate from Inishowen could never get elected without a decent vote in Letterkenny. Likewise, a candidate in Letterkenny could never get elected without a decent vote as well outside of the area, although the Letterkenny candidate can look further towards the Milford area. But it is, and it is, as I understand it, Charles Ward was elected on a vote of the members present at that meeting. So you have to go with that. I mean, Charles Ward is quite a good candidate. He's a good performer on the media. You've had him on there.
Yep, for sure.
He has a lot of experience in what he's doing. I think the question that you're asking is that, based in the Finn Valley, is he away from the epicentre of the catastrophe in Inishowen and in Letterkenny? I suppose in a way he is. But really, if people who have affected with Mica down the years, if they want to elect their own candidate, then they would need to vote for Mr. Ward.
There are some that see this as sort of giving a pass to the government parties, in that this could split the defective concrete vote, given the fact, of course, that, you know, Sinn Féin have promised bells and whistles, and it remains to be seen if that were to be delivered on. Strategically, though, do you have any issue with the strategy?
I do, from the point of view, is that, as I said, that Charles Ward's base is away from the epicentre, where Mica has hit the hardest. I'm not saying it isn't hitting in the Milford area or in the Finn Valley area or in the Glentish area, but Inishowen is the epicentre of it itself entirely. When you talk about the local elections as opposed to the general, you're talking about two different animals altogether, because local will stay very local, but here you're voting for politicians who are going to represent us in the Dáil for the next 5 years. And we talk about Fianna Fáil and the possibility that they're not going to have a seat in this constituency. That's rubbish. You have a strong minister there who has delivered a pile of money, but on a personal level, a minister can deliver very quietly and very efficiently. Just looking at the Fianna Fáil position, you know that they have 21.4%. They're 5% above a quota. They have 16,500 votes almost. Now there'll be some lost on the swings and gained on the roundabouts, you know. Pat de Cope's entry into it here by, you know, in the manner that he did, having gone through the convention and having got an overwhelming endorsement there. He's putting in a huge campaign. He's everywhere, almost at the same time.
So where does that Fianna Fáil vote go then, primarily?
I would say it'll be split pretty evenly. You know, Pat de Cope has a base in West Donegal. He will eat a bit into South Donegal and into the Finn Valley, where he would hope to get a substantial vote, better than he did the last time. Charlie McConlow will be looking to Letterkenny, to his own home base in Inishowen, and he'll be looking out towards Milford, where he got decent votes out here the last time. He got decent votes in Letterkenny. A senior minister, Greg, you're better with a senior minister than without one.
Yes, but that being said, there's no assurance that he's a senior minister after the next election either, is there?
I think he has to be.
Okay, so
it may not be in agriculture.
Okay, so in your view, Fianna Fáil, one or two seats, and if it's one, who?
It will be McConnell Logan as the sitting minister.
Okay, now I'm sure he would say no seat is safe. He doesn't want voter apathy.
None of the candidates do.
But that's your opinion, right? So you're confident Sinn Féin get two elected, yes?
Given that kind of a vote there of 45%, it's going to take something to tumble that there, to almost take a miracle to tumble that. I mean, Pierce Doherty, you know, 21,000, you know, these are huge figures. Mm-hmm. You know, 39,000 votes. They could lose 9,000 votes and walk in.
And so
there wouldn't be an issue there.
Right. Thomas Pringle, are you of the view that he'll be returned?
At this point, even though there's no election called yet and we haven't done an opinion poll, Thomas Pringle is a vote getter right across the constituency. He's sitting there on 5,500 votes or whatever. The last time he got a fantastic share out from the Sinn Féin of 2,800. That'll be there this time again to some extent and to some degree. Now, we're talking with the information that we already have. We have three of the candidates from the last election, John O'Donnell on 4,735. We have Martin Harley on over 3,000, with Peter Casey on 1,150. You have almost 9,000 votes there. They're going to be in the mix. Now, they can elect those. That bunch of votes on their own can elect a TD, but where do they distribute to? I would see Martin Harley's vote going almost exclusively to John McNulty. Peter Casey's vote will stay in Inishowen, and it will get distributed pretty evenly across that lower end of the constituency where he resides. John O'Donnell's 4,735 could be crucial. Based in Kilmacraden, his vote was generally in the Milford area, a bit in Letterkenny, but not near enough. There'd be a leaning there towards Pat de Cope. If Pat de Cope was to get a major share of John O'Donnell's vote, well, then he's going to be in the mix, and that's as simple as that there. And Pat de Cope is going to canvass every last vote right up to the close of polling. You can see that he's out everywhere.
Right, so then you are, so you're at this moment, as you say, you haven't done the polls yet, you're confident then that Thomas Pringle is elected. You believe Fine Gael have to be able to elect one person, and you believed that to be John McNulty. Nikki Bradley is going to be working very hard, of course, but she's indicated that she's going to do blended canvassing. I'm not sure if this county's ready for that at the moment, but that's her strategy. You would be old school, though. You believe you can't beat, whether it's in the media or not, you can't beat knocking on the doors. She is also going to knock on doors, don't get me wrong, but you would see that as a crucial part of this. If there are votes to be got from Fine Gael supporters,
look,
they want,
Greg,
to see the whites of your eyes?
Definitely.
Right, okay.
There was 91 candidates in the local elections, And those candidates who got onto the most doorsteps were the ones that got the seats. Social media is a cozy enough notion that it's a very lazy way.
It's kind of overrated. It's kind of overrated with the demographics we're talking about.
People appreciate that they come and knock on your doorbell, whether you're in or whether they leave a message. You've got a footprint that they've been there. You look at that and you consider it. They may come back again. We saw that with Michael McLaughlin's vote. You always see this with Michael Collum's vote. They're on the ground. They're there day and night, and they have a fair input on Highland Radio that with the local issues, and they go that extra mile. But there's going to be votes there that we have no idea where they're going. As I say, there's that package there of over 8,900 votes that were elect. It's 11.5%. You don't need 11.5% to get that last seat or that second last seat. But like at the end of the day, you're going to be depending on a fairly decent turnout. We can manage to. The last time we were up just under 63% on a Saturday vote, which wasn't a good idea, as it turned out. It was Leo Varadkar's idea, his first election as Taoiseach. The election before that in 2016, we were up on 65%. Those figures all count, because you could have 7,000-8,000 more people in Donegal to vote.
And who are they more motivated to vote for? In relation to the 100% redress party, obviously the entire party, all over in Ashone and elsewhere, will be saying vote Charles Ward.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he probably will do very well. But could he do well enough to win a seat?
This is the big question.
And who
question
does it impact
here.
Most? If in Inishowen, who would it impact most, Charlie McConnell Logue or Padraig McLaughlin?
There's a school of thought there that it could impact both of them pretty equally. And Inishowen would be determined to keep two TDs. Now, that is very, very possible. How likely it is at this point, we don't really know, because we've had no analysis on that. I mean, we're talking shop here, but based on our experience of sitting down in the Oral Leisure Centre year after year and night after night, and you absorb an awful lot of stuff without even having to think about it. But out and about, and I'm sure you're getting the same conversation as I am, what do you think is going to happen? You're on Highland Radio, you're bound to know what's going to happen. People will say to me in the Tribune, you don't need to do an opinion poll. an opinion poll that we do is a very, very big.
Well, it's far more thorough than, and this is not to slag any other polling agencies off, it's far more thorough than you might get from a national polling group. It takes into consideration the county, its population, and the sample figure is far in excess of I mean, you'll do a sample in Donegal that would be in excess of a sample that Red Sea might do in a national level.
Well, the average sample is in or around that 1,000 for up to 4 million voters. If you can imagine how complex that is. I know they have it highly analysed. They have a lot of experience in it. We do twice that sample for Donegal. And at the last election, our very first poll, which was about 265 votes, indicated Paddy Hart's seat, the father of the Dáil, that he would lose it, which he did. In 2016, we indicated that Padraig McLaughlin was going to lose his Dáil seat, which he did. We only saw one Fianna Fáil candidate getting elected the last time. It was too close to call. So, like, going out amongst the people, we've been accused of standing on street corners like teddy boys.
Teddy boys.
All this mad stuff that goes on. But the vast majority of people are delighted contribute to a poll.
Okay.
And like that's quite good, you know. And
all
like,
right, John.
Like weather's the big thing.
Right, we must move on. Thank you so much for your time. I'm not sure I've pinned you down, but you're waiting on this poll. I'm not sure I've pinned you down of any surprises or any certainties. And I kind of wish I wanted to.
Well, I mean, there's a possibility of two surprises, three surprises. There's a possibility that 100% redress. They're starting into a campaign. They have a big, big job ahead of them, much bigger than they ever could imagine. There's the possibility that Pat the Cope could win that seat back, that Fianna Fáil could get two seats. And there's a possibility that John McNulty can come in there. Those are three surprises, and this is the very first morning of any debate about it. And, I mean, if they're not big enough surprises, like, that's obviously going to alter as the campaign gets... Mm. When we get an election date and you see the posters going up and people... There could be a total lack of enthusiasm this time. Mm.
It's possible Charlie McConnell won't engage in a debate on this programme. Do you think that makes any difference? Will that make any difference to his chances?
I think that would be unfortunate if he didn't.
Of course it would be unfortunate, but I think he... His work on the ground and in the constituency and, you know, the various announcements he's been able to make, he probably can get away with it.
Yeah, but like is that serving the electorate through local radio?
Well,
I don't think that's a wider debate.
But I
it's not a wider debate. I mean, there's no reason that he shouldn't go on there for whatever differences. I mean, I do have differences with about everybody in election campaigns, but then... We're in a different medium. We're just not there in your face on the TV. We can just manage to bypass that through the newspaper. If Charlie McConnell was asking my opinion, should he do a debate on it? He has everything to gain by doing that debate to increase his vote. If he doesn't do the debate, then he loses out on that call.
Okay,
but. That's my view on it, that if you're offered the debate, a lot of people watching and listening, by all means, you're not going to get gutted, or would you? I haven't much experience of these kind of things.
No, you'd be all right. John?
I would imagine that you're going to be fairly fair to everybody. You mightn't be everybody's cup of tea at a certain time. None of us are, you know. Once you're in that business of commentating on elections and offering opinions, as you have to do, because like... There's something very special about the live debate, you know,
yeah.
In that it's the immediacy of the thing and it's the urgency of the thing, and people can change their minds after watching that debate.
All right, John, fascinating as always. Thank you so much of your time. I do appreciate it. We'll chat to you soon. John McAteer, of course, will be joining us for our election coverage. It wouldn't be the same without him, would it?